Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for this 20th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include country singer and author Jesse James Decker, actor Stephen Ogg, also actor Lou Diamond Phillips. We'll also visit with Senator James Lankford and actor from Star Trek, Walter Koenig. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, a comment, leave some feedback, and of course, share with your friends. Up first is reality star and social media influencer, country star and author, Jesse James Decker, going to talk about her new book, Just Feed Me. Jesse, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks for having me.
Now Jesse, what was the author, the best-selling author, that slash, was that the biggest surprise for you to have that after your name now as you look back at it?
You know, it's not something I ever expected or thought would happen, and I pinched myself. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe this is happening, and I'm just very excited about it, and I'm just honestly grateful.
Now the first book, Just Jesse, did you expect the response? So what was it like for you as the feedback started coming in? Was it hard to take in, I guess I should say?
I didn't know how it was going to go. Like, I didn't know how people were going to respond to it. I truthfully had no idea. And all I can keep saying is I'm grateful for it. You put this stuff out there, you work really hard on it, and you never know how the response is going to be, if people are going to like it or if they don't like it. You just hope that they do. And the fact that it sold as many copies as it did and that many people loved it, it makes my heart melt.
And feedback from that, obviously, getting some of your recipes and things like that, obviously preempted the opportunity for the new book. And in Just Feed Me, tell our listeners just a little bit about the story behind the book and what the finished product means to you on a personal level.
You know, I've been working on these recipes for so long. I have this little notebook in my kitchen where I jot down ideas that come to me. It's this dirty little notebook, and it's full of food. And it was just really cool to see it go from that handwritten notebook to what it is now in a published cookbook that is out for people to get their hands on. I still can't believe it. And it just, I don't know. It's been very surreal for me.
And for you, do you put extra pressure on yourself as coming through with the recipes, or maybe how many double takes or calls did you have to make sure you had that recipe just right?
Oh man, you know, I think probably there's a handful of recipes where, to be honest with you, I have a hard time measuring. I don't measure. That was the biggest challenge creating this book. When I'm in the kitchen, I just throw it together and take as I go. I don't measure anything. So to be really precise was a big challenge for me when I made this book, because I don't want, you know, my readers to mess it up because I didn't do it accurately. So that was the biggest challenge. And there was many recipes where I had to go back and go, okay, how much salt did I use again? I don't know. I just used my hands.
Now is Eric your biggest fan, or is he the biggest critic of your cooking? That's something I wonder about this morning.
Oh, I think he misleads me. He makes me think everything I cook is the best thing I've ever made in the world. So he hypes me up so much. I'm like, yeah, this is the best thing I've ever made. So I definitely would, you know, cook anything that I anything I cook. He had to taste it first, and he never told me he didn't like something, so I just put everything in the book.
Now for you, it was what was the process of weeding down the recipes for the book? I know you've got to have some that you weren't able to include, but what was the process to include them, if you will?
Including Eric, you're saying?
No, the recipes that are in the book.
Oh, sorry, you broke up at the end there. You know, I think it was just pretty much anything and everything that I was cooking in the kitchen. I wanted to just make sure everything that was in this cookbook is something I've made before or they're a family favorite. So I've been collecting all these recipes for years. So there's over 100 recipes, but there are over 100 recipes of things that I've been making for, you know, the last decade. So it wasn't that hard to figure out what I was going to put in this book.
Now, for you, the reality star, the author, the musician, the songwriter, all of that stuff. What is the hardest? What is the hardest segment of your life? I guess, or the most challenging for you?
Probably being an author. That is the hardest part. This is my second book, and to this day, I'll tell you, it's the hardest thing to do because you have to be so. I feel like I'm in school again, so I have to sit at my computer and I have to type everything out perfectly and have to write everything down. Like, I struggled in school. School was so hard for me. So it brings me back to just, you know, feeling like my head's going to explode because it's just so much that you have to make sure it's perfect. With music, you just go out there and you sing. And, you know, I can remember songs and just it feels way more effortless. With this, I really have to put my mind to it, and it's a challenge for me, but I like challenges. So it's been hard, but it's also been the most rewarding to know that all of my hard work, all the challenges I had to overcome to make this book, now to see it in its form and go to Target and see it on the shelves, it's like, okay, I did that. My hard work paid off, and I did that.
And how cool is it for you to share that experience with others that are facing challenges and to be able to inspire others that are having to go through having to deal with things that maybe are a little tough for them as well?
Oh, my goodness. Just, you know, you have to put your mind to it, and you have to not let any hiccups or bumps in the road stop you from doing it, because then you'll always just remember, I stopped because of that one challenge. It feels so much better to see what you've wanted be accomplished and happen and see your dreams come true. So I think for anyone that feels like they want to give up, don't. It feels worse to give up, and it feels better to overcome those challenges and see yourself win at the end of the day.
That's right. And again, the new book, Just Feed Me, Jesse James Decker. Always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with everything you got social media-wise and about the book as well.
Yeah, you can keep up with me, you guys, on Jesse James Decker. That's my Instagram, and I try to keep everyone as updated as possible. So, you know, you can check me out there. Thank you, guys.
Well, Jesse, it has been great to visit with you this morning. Have a great rest of your week, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Up next is actor and voice actor for many years, Stephen Ogg. We'll be talking about the new series, Snowpiercer. First off, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, tell us, Snowpiercer, this is a lot of anticipation, a lot of lead up to this one. And how excited are you to finally be this close to fruition for it to be out there?
Yeah, it's been a long journey for a lot of the actors, actually. This had, you know, version one, and now we're in version two. So this is very exciting to finally see all of the hard work pay off. And I think it's an exciting show and a nice little escape during these times when we, could use some fresh new entertainment. So it's, very excited to see it come out.
Now, if folks haven't seen the trailers or the previews or heard anything about it, I'd give our listeners just a little insight into the new series.
Well, basically what we have is a train that was built in preparation when the world freezes over, sort of a Noah's Ark, if you will. And there are people that buy tickets that have money, and they're all fine and dandy. And then when the train gets ready to depart, as the world has frozen over, there are those that didn't have money that need to fight to get on this train. Those that fight to get on the train are kept in the back. We're talking 1,001 cars long is the train. So in the front is the engine, first class, and then 1,001 cars back, you have the tailies, which is where my character Pike resides. And Snowpiercer starts 7 years into this journey of this train circumnavigating a frozen globe. And some people are going a little squirrely in the back and sort of feel like a first class gets sushi and we just get cockroaches to eat. Shouldn't we have a little more equality? So that's where we begin this story.
And how much fun is it to get into an alternate reality or something of those lines and really delving deep into the character? I mean, how much do you lose yourself as you take on a new character?
The production and the set design of each train is incredible. I mean, where Pike resides, the Taileys reside, it's the details on these trains, and they move, you know, the trains are shaking, and, you know, the first day of shooting when you're getting ready and all of a sudden action's called and you feel the train move for the first time, you just go blank. You forget your lines. It was like, oh, I didn't realize we're moving. So they did an amazing job at creating this world. And you certainly, when you're on there and it's, you know, I sort of say it's like the New York City subway in the summer. Imagine being stuck on a crowded train in the tunnel. That's what it feels like in the tale. Now, further up the train, it's much different in first class and all of that. They have a much different life, but you quickly, you know, you feel it, and there's people all around you. It's nasty, it's dirty, it's crowded. You know, you step into that kind of a set and you're already ahead of the game in how you feel the intensity of it, the claustrophobia of it. So it's pretty quick. And then, you know, at the end of the day you leave, and I'm not one to carry around my characters. No. I have enough in my head.
There you go. Now you've been in the business doing films since the age of 10, and obviously times have changed. Things have changed a bunch, but we're in a time like we've never seen before. What has set this apart in your mind, or made this so eerie at this time we're in right now?
I mean, what's eerie is it's the unknown, right? Always. I think the fear of the unknown is what the narration in the head can start to create stuff. I mean, I think these situations, these pandemics, I sort of equate it in a sense to, let's say, having a child. A lot of people have these awakenings of really the importance of life, what it is, love, family, friendships, all of that. And that's a good thing. That's why, you know, when we return to a new normal, ideally, hopefully that has allowed people to realize the importance of it. I mean, I think before, during, after, one should always stop and smell the flowers and see the colors and just appreciate and be grateful for what you have. So hopefully that's the biggest thing we can take away is count your lucky stars, man, that you got a day, you know, that you're vertical.
and opportunities. I know you do voice work as well. And has that afforded you some opportunities in this slow time to maybe get some of that kind of side work done as well?
I haven't, unfortunately, done. I mean, that used to be really my bread and butter for years, was doing all that voice work, voiceover stuff. But that business over the past 5 or 6 years has changed drastically, obviously, commercials and all of that. And so that started to sort of wean out for me years ago. Luckily segued more into being on camera. Business has changed. I mean, I was talking the other day, I think the one thing one could do during these times, filming wise, is ironically enough, motion capture, because that has the social distance. You can actually shoot in a studio where you don't have a whole crew. And you are sort of self-isolated in your motion capture suit. So, not that I have that opportunity right now, but right now, like everyone, I'm just sort of waiting it out to see what happens. But things have obviously changed.
That's for sure. And again, the new series, it debuts this Sunday, 9 Eastern, 8 local time on TNT. And Stephen, always like to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with everything you've got going on socially as well.
I am pretty much now just on the Instagram. That's basically my only thing. I've all the other social medias I've not really kept up with, and just the, you know, OGG _Stephen is my Instagram, which is, I call it my art installation project, right? Something that I like to create still. I like words. And I like to sort of do my little bit and try to keep it positive or interesting. and do my painting and put it on the studio wall, and then I leave. It's just sort of my, you know, here you go, here's something to think about, or here's one to ponder on. And then I just walk out of the room and allow people to, you know, artists, singers, lyrics, they write songs, and painters paint. I just do my little bit, my art installation, and then that's it. I just sort of allow people to feed on it and interpret it how they wish. But hopefully it provides a little entertainment in their day or a little thought provoking.
Well, there you go. Again, the new series premieres this Sunday night on TNT. Check out Snowpiercer. And Stephen, it's been great to visit with you this morning. Wish you safety the rest of the week, and hopefully we'll talk again real soon.
That sounds great. I'm wishing you safety and health to you and everyone.
Up next is actor Lou Diamond Phillips. He's on, of course, Prodigal Son. Talked about the season finale earlier this year. He'll also talk about a new book that he's got. First off, Lou Diamond, great to visit with you again.
Cameron, thanks for having me, brother. I always love chatting with you.
Now, we've got a couple things to talk about this morning. Obviously, season finale of Prodigal Son coming up on Monday, and also a new book. So, what has your time been like? Obviously, now kind of pulling away, social distancing and all that, but been a busy time for you nonetheless.
Yeah, man, it's been an amazing year. It really has. I mean, so proud to be on Prodigal Son. So grateful for all the support we've gotten from the fans out there. Like you said, the season finale is on Monday. And what's pretty wonderful is, you know, I mean, I know the rug got pulled out from everybody with this pandemic, but due to a scheduling issue, we were actually able to film the finale before we filmed the other episodes that did not get shot. So the finale on Monday night is exactly as the writers intended. It answers a lot of questions. It follows some threads that we've been following all year long. And, you know, I mean, it's just going to blow the doors off. It's really great. So I'm very excited about that. And meanwhile, you know, I've been finishing up the book. I've actually been working on this novel for years between projects and sometimes even on set. It's called The Tinderbox Soldier of Indira. It's available for pre-order through Aethon Books, which is Aethon, or Amazon. You can keyword Lou Diamond Phillips, you can keyword Tinderbox. And it was inspired by my wife, who actually is an amazing artist. She did these beautiful illustrations of Hans Christian Andersen's short story, The Tinderbox, and that inspired me to create, you know, this sort of longer story, this fantasy, fable, sci-fi kind of treatment of Hans Christian Andersen's work. And it's, you know, it's being published and comes out September 22nd. So not only will you get to read, you know, my writing, but Yvonne is going to be doing some amazing illustrations for it as well.
Now, what kind of pressure do you put on yourself, or have you put on yourself in the process of writing the novel that's made this such a long process?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, it's just time, you know. I mean, fortunately for me, I've been pretty consistently employed as an actor, you know. So there's always a new script to read. There's always, time spent on sets. And I've been able to do a little bit of work on it, you know, on the sets forever. But, I mean, the thing is, it's a real novel, man. It's not a short story. It's not a novella. It's, you know, 350 pages of a book. And it's fictional. So, you know, just taking my time writing it, doing some rewriting. And in the last year or so, I've been addressing notes from my agent, from the editor, from the publisher, all of this. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. The more I read about from other writers, the more I understand that, you know, writing is rewriting. Writing is editing. You know, it doesn't just magically come out of your head and onto the page, you know. So It's been an education, but it's been a wonderful process, you know. And it's just like acting, man. I mean, you know, everybody goes, yeah, I want to be a movie star. Well, you know, you don't snap your fingers and make that happen. You kind of have to hit the bricks, and you have to do the work, and you have to earn it. And so that's kind of been my experience as an author.
And as you've learned different artistic elements for yourself, how does that in the long run impact you on a personal level as well?
Wow, man, that's a great question. when people ask me about, you know, directing, or when I, you know, I've written screenplays or whatever else, they go, would you rather do that or would you rather do this? And the truth of the matter is, it all comes from the same tree, you know, to me. It's the same creative tree with different branches. We're storytellers, we're communicators. It's just learning the techniques and the technicalities of communicating in whatever, you know, venue you're in. And for me, it's always underlining, you know, the truth of who you are, the truth of what's in your heart, your thoughts, your values. I think the book as well, you know, it has to have a point of view, and a lot of times it has the point of view of the author, and that's, you know, there are thoughts of mine, there are things that I hold true and that I hold dear, that, you know, that I put into this just as much as I put them into my characters that I play. So I feel privileged, because what I do for a living is a constant education and a constant journey of self-revelation, you know?
That's cool. And again, the season finale coming up on Monday night. That's 9 Eastern, 8 local time on Fox. And also get out there, pre-order the new novel. You can do that on Amazon. And what was the other site?
Aethon Books is the publisher, Aethon. And they're on Twitter as well. Or you can look them up online. But you can pre-order either the Kindle or the hardcover right now.
All right. Well, Lou Diamond Phillips, always great to visit with you, my friend. I hope you're staying safe out there and look forward to visiting again real soon, my friend.
Cam, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much.
Up next, we visit with United States Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma. Senator, always good to talk to you, my friend.
Hey, good to talk to you as well.
And Senator, there's so much going on right now. There's COVID. There's obviously election. There's the Supreme Court nomination and the questions around that. And first off, tell us what you're hearing from the constituents here in Oklahoma. What are the top things that you're hearing this week?
Oh, a lot of conversation, obviously, about the Supreme Court. We've had lots of calls on both directions on it. Folks that have said, "Do not replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Let the next president do it." Another saying, absolutely replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the president, let him do it. So it's we've had a lot of calls both directions, a lot of emails on that. And then other folks are calling out the budget, issues around the end of the year spending packages with and then COVID-19, and people asking if we're going to have a different additional benefits and such. So lots of interest in lots of areas, and people are focused right now, which is a good thing.
And the nomination process, let's talk about that. You talked about, obviously, 4 years ago, we kind of had this same thing. But my question for you is it really different this time around than it was 4 years ago?
It is actually different than it was 4 years ago. And that is the challenge, to be able to walk through it for everybody. There are folks that said, hey, it's presidential election, period. That's all. This tradition is we don't vote during a presidential election. Actually, the Senate tradition is not that, and it's not just so much a Senate tradition. It's what the Senate has chosen to do for 200 years. The vast majority of individuals that when a Supreme Court opening happened and the president and the Senate were of the same party in an election year, they replaced them. When they were of a different party, the Senate chose not to replace them because they didn't have to. So I know I've said a lot to say that is the Senate tradition, but the Senate tradition is, you know, the Senate has the responsibility as much as the White House does on selecting the next Supreme Court justice. And we're of an opposite party, the Senate would pause and say, we're going to wait and see what happens in the next election. When they were at the same party, they replaced it. And there's evidence over and over and over. In fact, the last time there was a replacement in the Supreme Court where the Senate and the White House were of a different party was in 1888. Was the last time that actually occurred. So this is very typical. This is exactly how it's done. And I know some people say, well, that's just politics. But it is actually just politics in a way. It is through the people elected at the time that they elected them to be able to get the actual job done on it. So we're moving forward through this process. We don't know who the nominee is. The nominee will be announced on Saturday by the president. Then we'll have to make a decision. I've not stated whether I'm going to support the nominee. I don't even know who the nominee is yet. And so we want to be able to see the nominee, see what the process will be, and then make a decision from there.
And I know that the DHS confirmation of Chad Wolf, I know you've had time to speak with him and question there. Tell our listeners a little bit about Chad Wolf and the confirmation as well.
Yeah, Chad Wolf has been the acting Secretary of Department of Homeland Security now for a year. It's time to move him from acting to actually being the Secretary. This is part of the challenge that we face. And we talk about nominations for the Supreme Court. This has been a challenge that President Trump has had from the very beginning. Democrats have blocked every single nominee. And it's very funny to me right now, the number of Democrats are saying, I can't believe what you're doing on the Ruth Bader Ginsburg nominee, that you're playing with this nominee. I think every single nominee that President Trump has put forward, you have stalled and delayed and tried to prevent. A good example of that is our Secretary of Homeland Security. It's now been a year to be able to get through this process, to be able to get him officially confirmed. They just dragged their feet on all these folks. And so we're now finally getting to that point to move him from acting to being the Secretary. He has been in this position. In fact, he was the chief of staff for the former Secretary of Homeland Security. He was in the original TSA as leadership there back in 2002. So he's been somebody that's worked very passionately for our national security for a long time. And I think we'll do a very good job. But we talked everything from election security to borders to the violence in Portland and what federal law enforcement was doing there. We went through customs. I mean, it was around the horn of all the different issues of national security, including, obviously, terrorism, that continued threat. And he is clearly very well prepared.
And obviously, folks' minds are on the election, on COVID. And do you see any more resolutions coming forward as far as help, stimulus package, anything like that? Or are we kind of in a standstill? What are your words there, Senator?
Yeah, this has been a big frustration. I was back on the floor of the Senate yesterday making an argument on this just because I've been so frustrated. Democrats put out a $3 trillion package a couple of months ago now for the HEROES package, and Pelosi has said, my way or the highway, we got to do this. We put out a package much smaller, really targeted towards, okay, what are the key needs right now for small businesses, for airlines, for bus companies, for folks that are really hardest hit. And all of this was obviously getting additional money for vaccines and for testing. And so we tried to focus in on what are the key areas of need. There's a $300 billion package, which is enormous in a normal time. But for whatever strange reason, people call it skinny. We don't find $300 billion skinny by any means. And so we put that package forward, and they said, nope, we're not going to even discuss it, not going to debate it. So we tried to break it apart into pieces. And so let's just do the part about the post office separate. Let's do the part just about small businesses separate. And so far, Pelosi has said, nope, if you won't do all of what I want to do, we're going to do none of it. So that's difficult because we do not believe we need to spend $3 trillion at this moment based on where our economy is. The economy is recovering, but there is more that needs to be done. So in the meantime, we're passing this week the continuing resolution to be able to get through the budget year, to be able to make sure we don't have a government shutdown. But we're at an impasse right now on what to be able to do next on COVID. And we'll see if we can get that resolved in the next week.
And you talked about the shutdown. And I know this is a very sticky point for you. Tell us, is there still something in line for to keep those from coming out? Have you represented, I guess, is my question. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I've been back on the floor yesterday, even talking again about the government shutdown prevention bill that I have with a Democratic Senator, Maggie Hassan from New Hampshire. She and I have worked on this for over a year to say there is a way that we never have another government shutdown again. And it's a pretty straightforward solution that's not partisan, that says if we get to the end of the fiscal year and the appropriations work is not done yet, then it automatically starts what's called a continuing resolution, where it's exactly the same as the year before budget. So we continue on a little bit at a time. But at the same time, members of Congress cannot travel, can't leave. We have to be in session 7 days a week and can't change other topics other than budget bills until we actually get this done. And so it's a focus to say, here's a way to be able to stay in session continuously, get the work done, make sure that we hold the federal people, the federal workers and the American people harmless, but us continue the fight in D.C., but not have a shutdown. So we're going to fight about budget stuff. That's going to happen. But we shouldn't have the American people get all tied up in that, where they can't get access to federal agencies and shouldn't have federal workers on furlough while we're fighting about something.
That's right. Of course, Senator, folks can always visit the website and social media to keep up with everything you got going on as well.
Yeah, they can. They can just go to langford.senate.gov, langford.senate.gov. That's the best way to be able to reach me, or they can go on social media on any of the platforms at Senator Langford.
All right. Well, Senator Langford, always good to visit with you, sir. I hope you have a good rest of your week, and, well, I pray for a relaxing weekend for you as well, my friend.
I that would be a great prayer, and you're right, it would be miraculous.
Well, Senator, have a great weekend, sir.
You as well.
And our final guest is legendary actor, you know him from Star Trek, Walter Koenig has a brand new book. We'll be talking about that. First off, Walter, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. It's nice to talk to people from around the country, from around the world. So it's a pleasure talking to you.
Now, the got the release this last Friday, Beaming Up and Getting Off, Life Before and Beyond Star Trek. And Walter, how much can you even quantify what Star Trek has meant to you over the entirety of your career?
Well, quantify would probably take more than the time we have allotted, but it certainly has been an amazing experience, one that I have absolutely no regrets. The older I get, the fewer regrets that I have. I'm proud to have been part of something that had something significant to say that wasn't simply my mother, the car, that was actually a voice in somewhat of a medium wilderness, promising a better future for all mankind if we chose to care for each other and love each other and acknowledge that we are the same species, regardless of race, creed, religion, etc. I think that message makes, if I had nothing else to do with it than be part of that message, I'm very pleased, very proud of it.
And talk about Beaming Up, and this kind of chronicles the entire life for you. And Walter, what do you think it is about your life that draws people to you?
Well, to me personally, that I was just part of Star Trek. I've been asked a couple of times, are you still bitter about having such a small role? I was never bitter, and that's a misconception. What I was frustrated and embarrassed, because I would go to 10 conventions, like in Oklahoma City or Tampa Bay or wherever it might be, and receive this approbation and all of this love, which I thought was totally disproportionate to the contribution that I made. And I only wish that I had the opportunity to more, to better deserve the kind of welcome that I was receiving. So it wasn't bitterness as much as it was, as I say, frustration. Also, I'm an actor, and an actor wants to work, and an actor should never be satisfied with carrying a spear. You know, you want to be part of the action. You want to be part of what's going on. And I wanted the challenge. The challenge wasn't always there. And but on the other hand, how many actors along the line have had the opportunity that I have to continue to be identified as part of something important, part of something that has meaning and is worthwhile. After all these years, I think it's really amazing, and I'm very pleased on that basis. I did get an opportunity, you know, for a little bit to expose a little more of my ability, whatever it may be, on another television series, called Babylon 5. And that aesthetically, that was a little bit more rewarding for me. But I will never deny that if it wasn't for Star Trek, I would probably be in a totally different profession at this juncture.
Now, as you look back at before the Star Trek occurred for you, and see the way that you saw the world then, as opposed to after being a part of such a groundbreaking show, how has your visuals changed, the way you look at things?
Well, they haven't changed a great deal because I was totally sympathetic with what Mr. Roddenberry had to say. I grew up in a household progressive wasn't the dirty word, and I've never had a problem with treating everybody as an individual and not as a part of some ethnicity or race or religion or nationality or culture. People are each one an individual to be dealt with on the basis of their own merit. So that's what Sarcek said, and that's the way I believe. And I don't know if I'm 83, so I don't know if I actually answered your question or not.
Again, beaming up and getting off Life Before and Beyond Star Trek. And Walter, it has honestly been a true privilege to have the chance to visit with you this morning. Appreciate the work that you've done and also the positive influence that you keep having on future generations as well.
Well, thank you very much. I very much appreciate you giving me the time. I'd just like to add that today, May 1st, the book goes on sale on Amazon, which is more accessible these days than bookstores because we are prohibited from getting close to other people. So I offer that as an alternative way to finding the book if you are so inclined. And again, I appreciate your time, sir.
All right. Well, Walter, have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for joining us for this episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dolan. If you ever have a comment, a question, or anything else you'd like to know, find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, any of that. Find us at GQ with Cam. Also be sure and hashtag that as you share it with your friends. And if you'd like to help out with the funding for this podcast, feel free to click on the support tab and follow the instructions. We'll see you for episode 21 real soon.